Page 594, Pasikud Beis. The last thing we were learning, that after Nadav and Avihu died, for that great revelation that they had, so to speak, so Hashem said to Aaron, they shouldn't drink any more wine when you go into the Mishkan or to Paskin or Shiloh and things like that. So now, this is immediately following that story, Pasikud Beis. Vayidaben Moshe Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Aaron, Valalazar, Valisamar, and to Elazar and Isamar, Bonav and Isarim, his remaining children. And Rashi comments, what is the expression, remaining children? We know that Nadav and Avihu, Elazar and Isamar are remaining, right? Nadav and Avihu, that we know that. But Rashi explains, because they were also supposed to die. And as Rashi uses the expression from the Gemara, Tefillah Isa Machtza, Tefillah does 50%. When Aaron sinned by helping the Jews, so to speak, with the Egel on his level, which is a terrible sin, Hashem wanted Aaron's children should all die, all four. And it says in the pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu said, "V'espalo gamba ad Aaron ba'isai lemer." I also daven gamba ad Aaron. Moshe Rabbeinu daven for Aaron, and as Chazal used the expression, tefillah is 50% successful. So therefore, two of his kids died. And two of his kids remained. So the Torah is saying, even the remaining kids really were supposed to die, if it wouldn't have been for Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah that actually saved it.
Okay. Does that mean that they had wine also then, or?
Huh?
They did the same avera then?
No, he's speaking by the eagle, because Aaron sinned in the eagle. But the Gemara says it's really more in the merit of Aaron that the two children remained alive, more than in Moshe. Okay, now, the Mefarshim point out over here another concept. We know, l'cha'ira, that children are not punished for adult sins. Why should Aaron's children be punished for what Aaron did? They weren't babies. They were over bar mitzvah. Under bar mitzvah, it says, is part of the parents' possessions. But over bar mitzvah, why should why did the four kids die? Because Aaron sinned. So he said, that's why Hashem made that Aaron's two children, Nadav and Avihu, should also sin in a way that Aaron's merits because of the sin didn't help them. Meaning like as follows. The four sons, even Nadav and Avihu, can't die because of Aaron's sin. Aaron's sin, so Aaron's punished, not his kids. One second. The point is that Hashem made Nadav and Avihu sin, that their own sin would cause them to die. Possibly Aaron's merits would save them, but because Aaron sinned in the eagle, the merits didn't save two of the kids. But it's not the concept that because Aaron sinned, Nadav and Avihu died. The Rashi explains, really, all four should have died, and Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah helped 50%. It means that they did their own sin, like Nadav and Avihu did, but Aaron's merits didn't save them because he sinned in the eagle. What?
You just said it last time, you said that Aaron didn't want to build up the eagles, and he didn't do the Avera.
He didn't do the Avera, like I said, on his level, that's what he just said, on his level, the fact that he told the Jews, bring the gold, and tomorrow we'll make the eagle and all that. So even though his intention was Moshe Rabbeinu would be back and save the whole situation, and he took the gold and threw it into the fire, bottom line was, the people brought him the gold, he did throw it into the fire, and the eagle came out. I mean, that's the bottom line of it. So on his level, that was a sin, not on our level. What?
So the concept of the children suffering for the sins of the parents, what you're saying is it's exactly the opposite.
No, both ways it doesn't work.
The children could be saved by the merits of the parents.
Correct. There is, the Gemara, the Pasuk says, La'yumusu aves abanim, ubanim la'yumusu alaves, ish bechata yumas. There's a Pasuk in Chumash that says, fathers don't die for parents. You know, don't die for kids' sins. Kids don't die for parents' sins. Each person dies for their own sins. That's one pasuk. In the Aseret HaDibros, there's a pasuk that says, "Pekeid avayin aves al banim al shileishim al ribayim." That God keeps the sins of the parents for four generations. Okay? So the Gemara asks, That's a contradiction. Here we say you die for your own sins, not because of your parents. And here it says that it's accumulative for four generations. So the Gemara answers, it's not a contradiction. Each person dies for their own sin means if the parents were wicked and the children are not, then they don't die for their other sins. But when the children follow in the evil ways of the parents, so then it becomes accumulative. Okay? Now there is, the Rambam writes, and it's very difficult in human psychology to understand this, but the Rambam writes that children under Bar Bas Mitzvah do die for parents' sins, because they're not considered their own entities yet, they are considered the possessions of the parents. And therefore the Rambam does write that young children will die for the sin of the parents, because they're not their own people yet, until they're Bar Bas Mitzvah. But that has nothing to do with it. Anyway, so, what did he tell Elazar Yisamah, the leftover children? Chus ha-mincha, take the flower offering, ha-neseres me'ishi Hashem, which is left over from the karbonis that they brought. Okay? Now, there were two meal offerings that day. One was brought by Nachshon ben Aminadav, because each one of the Nesiim, you know, brought their sacrifice to dedicate the Mishkan, and the first day was Nachshon ben Aminadav. And also there was a mincha shmini, which was the meal offering, was brought in the eighth day, which was vayibayim mashmini. Okay? They had the service of most meal offerings, the kohen did the kmitza, you know, like we learned, the scooping out. These are the two that Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu like this. Take the mincha, which is neseres me'ishi Hashem, which is left over after they made the kmitza, and they burned that on the mizbeach. V'chlu matzis etel ha-mizbeach, and eat it as matzis next to the mizbeach, ki kedosh kedoshim hi, because it's holy as of holies. Now what's going to happen over here, let me tell this story outside a little bit. There are a bunch of korbanos, okay? Now you have to understand, there's a whole event, there's a day, a very eventful day going on over here, okay? They dedicate the Mishkan, the fire comes down, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu goes out with Aaron, they bless the people, the fire finally comes down, okay? Consuming the stuff on the korbanos. Nadav and Avihu sin. All of a sudden they die. Moshe Rabbeinu calls in the two cousins, says, like, go, take them away. Okay? Right away Hashem says to Aaron, okay, no more drinking wine. But they're still in the middle of the day. There's a lot of things that have to happen that day. It's still the day of the dedication of the Mishkan. So there's korbanos going on. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, guys, let's move on. Okay? Take the mincha, leftover mincha, and eat it. But you need to eat it next to the mizbeach. Why? Ki kedosh kadoshimi, because it's holy of holies. As we learned at the beginning of Vayikra, there are kabanas that are called holy of holies. Those are to be eaten by male kohanim inside certain areas. Then there are other kabanas, as we'll soon see, that would be allowed to be eaten by the families of the kohanim anywhere in Yerushalayim. Okay? So he says, "V'achal to meisi b'makom kaddish, you should heat it in a holy place. Ki chokcha v'chok benechihi, this is your portion and the portion of your children. Me'ishe Hashem, from the burnt offerings of Hashem. Kuchein tzveisi, because so I was commanded." So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Aaron and his kids, "Take the leftover flour which was already separated from for the kmitza, eat it next to the mizbech." And the breasts of the waving of the korbanos which were brought, and the thigh of the uplifting, you have to eat it in a pure place. Now this does not have to be eaten next to the mizbech. The Torah says this has to be eaten in a pure place. You, your sons, your daughters, meaning anybody from the family who is allowed to eat it with for the children. This is a part of yours and your children's part, from the korbanos of the Jewish people. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them like this, you guys are Einin and Einin, and this is very important for the upcoming story. In Halacha, there's something called an Einin, and there's somebody called sitting up for Bit Shiva. Einin is from the time of death of a relative that you have to sit shiva for until the burial. then the person has the status of an Einain. An Einain is not allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash. He's not allowed to eat Karbonis. The exception of this is Kohen Gadol. That's the exception. Okay. After the funeral, you start the Shiva process. Then they're not called Einain anymore. They're called people sitting Shiva. Okay. Meanwhile, Aaron and his children were in the status of an Einain. Because they weren't buried yet. They just took the bodies out. Get them away from the joy. You know, we're celebrating a simcha over here. Hashem says to Moshe, get your cousins and carry out the dead bodies. But they were still in the status of an Einin, which halachically did not apply to Aaron, but applied to his children. Okay? And the normal, a Kohen Gadol is never an Einin. Okay? There's no concept of an Einin, of any mourning for that matter, for a Kohen Gadol. Okay? Now, here, there's a unique din. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them, listen guys, even though you're an Einain, even though you're Aninus, nevertheless, you should eat the Karbonis because this God commanded me that you should eat it. So this was an exceptional case. The reason, as we'll soon learn, and this is going to be a major dispute coming up between Moshe and Aaron in a few minutes, and that is, there are regular sacrifices, and there are unique sacrifices. Okay? The ones they brought completely solely on this day were unique korbanos. The korbanos of inauguration were different than the korbanos of a regular year. Okay? For these unique korbanos, Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu, the brothers have no status of an einin. They should eat everything. They should eat the flour offering. They should eat the thigh and all the other parts of the animal. Sheik HaTruma, the thigh of the raising up animal, the Chazi HaTanuva and the breast of the waving up animal, Alisha Chalovim Yavil, upon the fire offering fest to wave it, Lahaniv Tanufa Lefnei Hashem, to wave it as before a carbon, as a carbon.
Any part of that thigh?
No, some of it was burnt on the Mizbech. This is the parts that were allowed to be eaten. Mm-hmm. This will be an everlasting decree from Hashem, kasher tziva Hashem like God commanded. Okay? So Mela, this is what he's telling them. These korbanos are unique. You need to eat them. Okay? Now let's see the next pasuk. Here starts a whole... the first halachic argument in the Torah. The commentators point out an interesting thing. This is the first halachic argument coming up between Moshe and Aaron. Ve'isir ha-chatos, the seir ha-chatos, the he-goat of the chatos, and Rashi explains there were three chatos that day. This is the one from Rosh Chodesh. Okay? Dorash, Dorash Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu inquired doubly into it, so to speak. Behine said if it was burnt. Vayiksev al Elazar al Isamar bnei Aaron. The Moshe Rabbeinu got angry at Elazar and Isamar, the children of Aaron, Hanesarim Lamer, who remained. Let me tell you what happened over here outside, and then we'll see it inside. The truth is, the best thing would be to read this in the English over here at the bottom, on page 595. Because this brings it out very clearly, and then we could discuss the meaning of it. And the second column, it says 16 to 20, right? Okay, the dispute between Moshe and Aaron. Three he-goats were offered as sin offerings that day. One was the special offering of Nachshon, which was unique that day, the tribal of Yehuda. The second was for the inauguration of the Mishkan. Both of the above were Kotshi Shah, which would never be offered again. Okay? And 595 at the bottom. Okay? The third he goat was the sin offering of Rosh Chodesh. Okay?
Bottom.
Previously, Moshe had instructed the Kohanim that they should eat the meal offerings, both of which were Kotshi Shah, and the Kohanim had done so. As noted above, there was an exception to the general rule, because even a Kohen Gadol who may perform the services in Einin may not eat the offerings in that state. So now the question is, can they eat this Korban Chatas of Rosh Chodesh? Okay, now, the unique ones for that day only, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, they should eat it. Okay, so there's no question, they should eat it. There was one Korban that they brought every Rosh Chodesh from then on in the Beis HaMikdash. We say in davening every day, we read it on Rosh Chodesh, every Rosh Chodesh, they brought Seir Izim Echad L'chatas. They brought a goat for a sin offering. Okay? Every Rosh Chodesh, there was a communal sin offering. This Korban, Aaron burnt. He said, we're not going to eat it, we're going to burn it. Moshe Rabbeinu checked into it, and he found out that they burnt the Korban. The problem is, Moshe Rabbeinu told them to eat the Korbanos, because God commanded to eat. Aaron said, no, God meant only those Korbanos that were unique for the day. Those Korbanos that were unique for the day had a different law, and those Hashem said you should eat. But the one which was brought as a Rosh Chodesh Korban, which is not a unique Korban for that day, it's every Rosh Chodesh, Aaron said, we're in Einin, how could we eat it? Even I, as a Kohen Gadol, can't eat it. So what did Aaron do? Aaron burnt it. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and says, hey, what happened over here? You burnt it? Why didn't you eat it like I told you to do? So Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, maybe something you did wrong in the service. Maybe you squirted the blood in the wrong place, and because you squirted the blood in the wrong place, maybe that's why you invalidated the Korban. Aaron said, no. He said, maybe you were Tamei? No. So Moshe Rabbeinu started screaming at Elazar and Isamar, not at Aaron. He screamed out of respect to his older brother. He didn't scream at the kids, at Aaron. He screamed at the kids. As we'll see in the pasuk, the kids didn't answer Moshe. They said, our father is here, we're not going to speak in front of our father. They had respect for their parents, like today's kids. They had respect for the parents that they did not scream, they did not speak in the presence of the father. I didn't mean only one particular person here. Okay. So what happened? So Aaron says to him, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm telling you the story outside before we learn it inside. Aaron says to Moshe Rabbeinu, what are you talking about? This is a different Korban than the other two God told us to eat. Those were unique. Because an Onen, even though a Kohen Gadol who's an Onen could bring the Korban, you still can't eat it. And this is a regular Korban. Do you think that God said the din to eat it even on the regular Korban? How can you say God said that? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. I made a mistake. This is the story that we're going to discuss now in detail. But this is the general story of what happened over here. And there's a lot of very interesting concepts over here going on in the dispute. And why Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. And because Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, he forgot the halacha. And there's another time in Chumash. Later on in Parshas Matis, that the Jews went to war and Midian, and they came back with a lot of spoils and juicy free money. So they were all running and grabbing the spoils. And Moshe Rabbeinu got angry at them for what they did. And he forgot the halacha of how to kosher utensils. And over there, Elazar, who was the Kohen Gadol, because Aaron died already, who was the Kohen Gadol, opened his mouth and said, Moshe Rabbeinu, excuse me, you've got the halacha. And he said the halacha of how to kosher utensils. Okay? So the Gemara explains that because Moshe Rabbeinu became angry, he forgot the halacha. Okay, that's the general broad story of what happened. Okay, now let's go back into the Chumash and see it inside. Let's see Pasuk Tzayin, the bottom of 594. So like this, they see the achatas, the seir of the goat of the sin offering. Doresh Dorash Mesha. Mesha Rabbeinu checked into it insistently. Vinei Seiref, and he found out that it was burnt instead of being eaten. And it's interesting, by the way, you see between the words Doresh Dorash, here there's a star in these Chumashim. That is exactly midway words of Chumash. In middle, Doresh Dorash, that means that he inquired, Drasha, you know, to speak and check into it. Those words are exactly in the middle of the whole Chumash. And the commentaries explain an interesting concept. You need Doresh on one side, Dorash on the other. You know, seek, seek, learn, learn. That in the middle of the Torah, both sides says learn, learn. I mean, you should never stop learning. You always have to keep on learning and keep on going deeper and deeper to understand. Another Pelosh Rebbe, Hungarian Rebbe, said once, it also teaches us that as much as you learn, you know, you're going both sides, Dorish, Dorash, as much as you're learning, you're always only in the middle. You're always in the middle, you can never be complete in learning. Okay? So this is why these words are in the middle. So Meshe Rabbeinu says like this. Two questions. Number one, why did you burn the Rosh Chodesh offering? And why, if that's the case, that you shouldn't eat the Rosh Chodesh carbon, why did you eat the other carbonis? In other words, Meshe Rabbeinu put everything into one category. Whether it was for that day, or for permanent, Meshe Rabbeinu said it's all the same. You either eat them all, or you eat them none. This they ate, and this they didn't eat. So Meshe Rabbeinu says to him, what are you doing? You're either supposed to eat everything, and if you think you're not allowed to eat it, then you shouldn't have eaten anything. Vayik Seif, and he was angry. Why did Meshe Rabbeinu get angry? Because if they did it wrong, if they were wrong by what they did, they went against the mitzvah of Hashem. And not only that, this was the first day of the inauguration. It's like the initial day you're already doing something wrong. So Meshe Rabbeinu got very angry. Madu, what did he say? And it's very interesting also. The Mefarshim point that Rashi says, why did he turn to Elazar and Isamar? Why didn't he scream to Aaron? Because Aaron was 3 years older than Meshe Rabbeinu. He had respect for him, and he didn't scream at him. And he said like this, Maldua le'achalta mesachatos b'mkei makedish, why didn't you eat, why did you burn this chatos, why didn't you eat it? Keep in a holy place. Ki kedish kadoshimi, it's the holy of holies. Ve'eis and nosen lachem, and this carbon Hashem gave you. Losses is aveno eda, to carry the sin of the assembly. Lechaper aleim lefnei Hashem is forgiveness. So it's such a holy carbon. Hashem told you to eat it. Hein lehuva is dama. If the blood was not brought properly, achol teich laisa, then you should have eaten it. Bakedish in the holy places, kasher tzivisi. Meaning, Meshe Rabbeinu said like this to them: maybe you brought the blood in the wrong place of the carbon. Maybe you disqualified the carbon. And when they said no, so Meshe Rabbeinu said, so why didn't you eat it? So then why didn't you eat it? And he got angry. So what happens? Beidabed Aaron al Meshe. Aaron said to Meshe like this. And who answered? Aaron. And as Rashi says, not because the kids had nothing to answer. Because later on in Chumash, when Elazar had to speak, he spoke. But the children did not want to speak in front of their father. Even though Meshe Rabbeinu screamed at them, they were silent and they let their father answer the complaint. He says like this to Meshe. Hein ayem ikrivas chatosim aseilosam lifnei Hashem. Was it they who did it? They didn't bring this korban. Abatikrana esi ko'ela. that they were the ones that brought it, I brought it. And he said, even if I did bring it, v'achalti chatos ha'yemen, I would have eaten it. But ayita b'nei Hashem would have been proper in the eyes of Hashem. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu says, like Rashi explained very simply, Aaron said to Moshe, what are you comparing the two korbanos? The special ones for the day, God said, eat, we ate. The one that was for every month of the Shchedish Karban, an Einain is not allowed to eat it. Even I, who could bring a Karban, can't eat it. So why do you think we should eat it if it's a regular, everyday Karban? And he said to Moshe, you're making a mistake. You can't compare the two. God couldn't have told you that. So what happened? Vayishma Moshe. Moshe heard. Vayitav be'einav, and it became good in his eyes. Meaning, Moshe Rabbeinu did not defend his opinion. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. He said, I made a mistake. Okay, so it's a very halachic dispute over here. As the commentators explained, this is the first halachic dispute. What did God mean? What did God mean when he said what he said, eat it? Did he mean all of it, or did it only mean the unique ones? So Aaron maintained it was only the unique ones. Moshe Rabbeinu maintained it's all of it. Okay? So, what was the source of their argument? Philosophically, what was the difference between Moshe and Aaron? When Moshe thought all has to be eaten, and there's no difference between the unique ones and the regular ones, and Aaron thought differently. So the Rebbe has an interesting explanation here. The Rebbe writes like this. Moshe is Emes, and Aaron is Shalom. Okay? Moshe says, Ma'ra midas Emes ra. Moshe Rabbeinu was Teira. Moshe Rabbeinu was Teira. We know, everybody knows that when Moshe Rabbeinu died, the men cried. When Aaron died, men and women cried. Why? Moshe's thing was Teira's Emes. Emes. Okay? Aaron, his thing was to make peace between husband and wife, between friends, and therefore everybody cried when Aaron passed away. What's the difference between the attribute, in a deeper sense, between Emes and Shalom? Emes, truth. Truth is everything in the world is God. There's no difference between one thing and another thing. The core of everything is really the same. The core of everything, if you look at Emes, what's Emes? Emes Hashem Leilam. Everything is God. There's no difference between A, B, C, and D. Everything's the same. When you deal with Shalom, you're dealing with different things that need to be made peace. You're not dealing with uniqueness of everything being the same. If everything's the same, like we mentioned Saturday night, you don't need to have peace. Peace is when you have conflicts, when you have two opposites, and you make peace. Aaron looked at details of separation. Aaron said, there's a difference between unique sacrifices and those that were permanent sacrifices. Unique sacrifices could be eaten, permanent sacrifices can't be eaten. So Aaron's approach to this whole thing was, you can't say everything's the same. Everything eaten. If God says eat, it means everything. Because there are different details over here. This is one detail, this is a different detail. Moshe Rabbeinu gave in, and he said, this is what Hashem really wants.
Peace.
Because Shalom is sometimes more important than Emes. And that's why you're allowed to stretch what's called in English a white lie. You're allowed to stretch the truth for the sake of Emes. For the sake of Shalom, I mean. In order for, because the truth is, Emes and Shalom are really opposite. How do you make peace? You stretch here a little bit, stretch here a little bit. What did Aaron do? When two people fought, Aaron went to the guy and said, you know, he wants to make peace with you. He never told him he wants to make peace with him. But Aaron understood a Jew always wants to do good. So a Jew wants to make peace. So if Reuven and Shimon were fighting, yeah, they hated each other. Aaron went to Reuven and said, you know what Shimon told me? He wants to be make up with you. So Reuven said, listen, Shimon wants to make up with me, you know, okay. So he says, okay, I agree. Then he ran to Shimon and said, Reuven told me he wants to make up with you. Yeah? That's not real emes. It's not a lie, but it's not emes. Emes is, you say it the way it is. People who say things the way it is are not lovable people. We all know that. You have people that will tell you exactly what they think of you. Yeah, they don't have too many friends. Emes. But that was Moshe Rabbeinu's love. Moshe Rabbeinu was Emes. Moshe Rabbeinu saw, in everything in the world, he saw God. If everything is God, there's no difference between A, B, C, D, this carbon, that carbon. If Hashem said eat, you eat it all. Aaron said, cool it, you know? Aaron said, there are differences. There's this, and there's that, and this has these details, and this has these details, and you gotta work them out. At the end, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Aaron, your way is really right. Because the ultimate is shalom. Yeah.
You're at somebody's house and they serve you a meal that's really
awful. You're allowed to say it's good.
That's a lie.
Well, you don't say I've never... Well, 1 minute. If you say, I've never tasted such a meal before, that could be the truth. You don't have to say such a good meal.
But you can say it's good, right?
You can say white line in the sake of peace.
How do you dance in front of the
camera? I was just... Mom was going to say this.
What?
The famous Gemara in Ksuvos. It's a song. Keitz of Meragdim. Everybody sing Keitz of Meragdim with Neakala. Yeah? In the Gemara in Ksuvos. It says, how do you dance in front of a kala? So there was this guy by the name of Shammai. I'm sure you heard of him. Shammai Emer Kala Kameis Shehi. You dance in front of the kala the way she is. She's beautiful, you say she's beautiful. She's ugly, you say she's ugly. You say the truth. The truth. You need to say the truth. Okay, you have to say the truth. Beiselel says, and this is the way the song goes, Kala Noa V'chasuda. A beautiful kala. Okay, so Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, hey, excuse me, sir. The Torah says, Midvar Shaket Tirchok. The Torah says, you're not allowed to lie. And if the girl was ugly and crippled and who knows what, you're going to dance Kalu Norva Chasuda? And the Torah says, Midvar Shaket Tirchok, you're not allowed to lie. Right? So what did Beis Hillel answer them? In the eyes of the one that took her, she's beautiful. And the Torah says, V'yahavta re'echa kameicha. Okay? If you think something is nice, you know, you take something, you show somebody, you bought something, and you think it's gorgeous. Yeah? And your spouse thinks, let's not discuss it, what they think it is. And they show you, and you really think it's gorgeous. Yeah? If I say to you, and I think it's ugly. Okay? And I say to you, you know, it's really nice. It's not a lie, because you think it's nice. Okay? So, the question is, it's not the truth. The truth is, she's not Kala Norva Chasuda. She's not this beautiful Kala, she's who knows what. The answer is, for Sholem, you can stretch the truth by saying, in his eyes, if he took her, she's beautiful.
You're allowed to fake it
for the sake of Shalom. You're definitely allowed to fake it. But
so really Hashem meant that everything should be eaten?
No, Moshe Rabbeinu said down, you're right. What you did was right.
But Moshe is Emes, and initially he felt...
But Emes sometimes gives into Shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu said,
I understand. At the end, he continues.
No, but he says, here, Hey, Devalei Bush, Leim Elei Shemaiti. Okay? Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're right, I didn't hear this distinction, but you're right. Which again shows another thing. It's like, there's a very interesting question over here. Bech Now, if you think about it, this is not nice for Moshe Rabbeinu, this pasuk. First of all, it says Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. Because of that, he forgot the halacha. Okay? And then he gets into a fight with his brother. What does the Torah gain by telling us the story? It's not halacha. It's a story that took place, yeah? The Torah should have just left it out. Why does the Torah speak negative about it? So the point is, because they're both right. Sometimes you need emes. Sometimes you need shalom. Okay? But the Torah teaches us that even Moshe Rabbeinu admitted that he was wrong.
In the sake of the shalom.
No, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I was wrong. I mean, not because of shalom. He said, the truth is, Hashem didn't say what I said he said, to eat it all.
So why did he say it?
Because that's the way he understood what Hashem meant. Because Moshe Rabbeinu didn't see details. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the thing the way it is. Mm-hmm. Hashem said, eat, it means eat everything. But it wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu said that Hashem really told me, but Moshe Rabbeinu said, I didn't hear this difference, and you're right. Which shows, number one,
humility.
It shows, number one, a few things in lessons in life. If you can understand, Moshe Rabbeinu's anger over here was not personal. Not that Aaron did something wrong to Moshe personally that he got angry. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu get angry? Because he thought they did an Aveda. He thought they did an Aveda. So right away the Torah teaches us a very important lesson. Even anger which you think is holy is no good. Even holy anger, that you see somebody sinning and you want to yell and get angry at them and scream at them for doing something wrong, the Torah says even Moshe Rabbeinu, when he did it, it was a mistake even on Moshe Rabbeinu's part. Because any anger, even if it's not personal, and the attack here wasn't personal at all. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take it in any personal way. Moshe Rabbeinu, because he didn't do anything to Moshe Rabbeinu personally. Okay? They did something wrong, and Moshe Rabbeinu thought, in the day of inauguration, they did, on the first day of Kabbanis, they already made a big mistake. They didn't listen to Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, Mamish L'Shem Shemayim, for the sake of Kedusha, and the Torah says even that anger is no good. And the Torah is telling us not a story that happened to Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. The Torah is telling us a halacha, that to be angry, even for holy matters, is no good, wrong. And you forget a halacha because of it. And then the Torah tells us another major concept in life. If you're wrong, say, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Which people don't like doing. You make a mistake, say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Besides the other respect issues that the Torah teaches us. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't scream at his older brother, he had respect. So he screamed at his kids. The kids had respect for their parents, for the father, they didn't answer back. Not that they didn't have what to answer. They had what to answer. But they didn't answer. They said, our father's here. We're not talking in the presence of our father. So there's a lot of life stories, so to speak, from these few psukim of exactly what happened in this whole fight between the brother, of Moshe and Aaron. Yeah.
So when we hear stories of like some of the Rebbe getting angry at a certain issue that took place or something, are you saying that they got angry in appearance but not really within themselves?
Halacha says, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that even when you have to get angry at your kids or students in class, you're only supposed to fake it, but not really be angry. That's what it's supposed to be. Okay. Now starts Perek Yud Aleph. Now starts what's called the laws of kosher, kashrus. Perek Yud Aleph, no, page 596. Okay. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron, leim Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron. In this case, Hashem spoke to Moshe, who spoke to Aaron. And he says, Dabro b'nei Yisrael leimer, speak to the Yidin, and say, Zeis achaya asher teichlu, this is the animal which you're allowed to eat, mikol abehem asher al oretz, from all the animals that are on the face of the world. Okay? Meaning, I want you to speak to all the Yidden that everybody is equal. Now, why does he say Zeis achaya if he's speaking the laws of animals? There's behema, which is domestic animals. There's chaya, which are beasts. Why does he use the expression Zeis achaya? This is the animal, the beast that you see from all the animals. So Rashi says, because Hashem says, this is the concept of chayim, of life. Because chaya comes from the word chay, life. He says, because you people are connected to Hashem, and you're chayim kulcha mayim, you're all alive, therefore this diet is restricted to you. Okay? And Rashi brings down not the whole mashal, but Rashi says there's a mashal in the Medrash of a doctor. There's a doctor comes to a certain patient, and he says, you can eat whatever you want. Another patient, the doctor says, no, this food you shouldn't eat, this food you shouldn't eat, this food you shouldn't eat. So the Medrash said, what's the difference? This person was dying anyway. Nothing could save them. So the doctor said to him, you know what, you can eat whatever you want, because it doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. You're going to die. To the healthy person, the doctor said, listen, you want to stay healthy? This is what you eat. This is what you could eat. This is what you can't eat. The whole concept of kashrus is what's called a chayk. There is no logic in it. There's no logic why a chazir is treif and a cow is kosher and you shacht it this way and this way and this part. And it's totally illogical. Hashem said, this is the chaya, this is the chayim that I'm telling you to do. By doing this, this separates you from the goyim by what you eat, because I separated you from the goyim in your existence. So basically, the whole concept of kashrus is, as you would know the expression, you are what you eat. A person is what they eat. So therefore, kashrus, in this respect, is more important than any other mitzvah. All the other mitzvahs, let's say you hit somebody. If you do an aveda, you hit somebody. You're doing it with a particular part of your body. You do it with your hand, not your foot. Kashrus, because the food becomes your blood and flesh and, you know, the fats of the body. So therefore, when a person eats kashrus, it is something that literally affects the entire body. Everything in the person is affected through the concept of kashrus.
Teaching
the Sinhedrin school. Here. Okay. Anyway, that's one thing. Another thing, in the back drawer, next to the phone, and there's another very interesting Rashi over here. And the Rebbe once spoke, you read through the Rashi, and you read it, and it sounds simple, and you stop to think for 1 second, you say, 1 second, this is remarkable. And the Pasuk Zeis Achaya, Rashi says, Zeis in Hebrew means this. You're pointing to it. So Rashi, Melamed, Shoya, Meisha Eches Bechaya, Meisha Rabbeinu said, this animal you could eat, this animal you can't eat. If Meisha Rabbeinu says, this animal you could eat, that means Meisha Rabbeinu was holding the animal. Melamed, Veher Omara Eisei, Li Yisroel, Zeis teichlu v'zeis lei teichlu. So what did Moshe Rabbeinu do? Rashi says he held every animal to show him this you could eat and this you can't eat. Yeah? Stop to think for a minute. Where was he?
In the desert.
He was in the desert.
Yeah, where did all those animals come
from? Right. I'll give you an example. A kangaroo didn't exist in the Midbar. Kangaroos in Australia.
Uh-huh.
Right? Certain animals, I don't think they had elephants in the Midbar.
Exactly.
They're in Africa. Yet, Rashi says, Zeis Achaya, Melamed, Moshe Rabbeinu was holding on to every... He said, you read through the Rashi, you know, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu was holding the animals. Stop to think for a minute.
It's like Adam.
After half the animals of the world weren't in the Midbar, Bechlal. What did they have? They had donkeys and sheep and cattle. What else did they have? All the unique species of animals they didn't have. So the answer obviously is, Moshe Rabbeinu, a miracle happened to Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem brought every animal in the world, And the Rebbe says, you see from here that when it comes to teaching Torah, whatever you need to get done, gets done. Whatever you need the animal, Hashem will bring you the animal. But it's like a very simple Rashi, you read through it, Moshe Ben held all the animals and showed it, and you realize for a second, 1 second, this is an unbelievable concept. Okay, we're going to learn a little bit of, well, today at least. No, he actually held the animal. That's what Rashi says.
Mm-hmm. He was also Aaron's son. And ordinary
son. Yeah, yeah. Everybody saw it. Moshe Rabbeinu showed it to the Jewish people. Now, all these kinds, before we even go into kashrus, I mean, what the psukim are going to say, what the details of kashrus, what makes an animal kosher or not, and the fish and the birds and all that. Obviously, there's nothing physically wrong with eating chazer. It's not that it's physically unhealthy for a Jew to eat chazer. For a guy, there's absolutely nothing wrong with eating a chazer. It's not physically unhealthy. For the neshama of the Jew, spiritually, it's unhealthy. It has nothing to do with physical, has nothing to do with the bug or the illnesses that they find in the and the animals or whatever it may be. It is, as the Chinuch writes, harm caused by these foods is not physical. They are only spiritual impediment. And because the Jews are spiritual, they're Hashem's nation, Hashem separated them from the rest of the nations of the world in a spiritual sense, not in a physical sense. Physically, we're just like a guy. The same thing in the eating of the Jew. Hashem separated the Jew from the rest of the world. This is spiritually healthy. And this is not spiritually healthy, or spiritually unhealthy. And the impact, like we said, that it has on the person is an unbelievable thing, because it impacts the entire existence of the body. Meaning, the whole body becomes spiritually unfit. And therefore, it's like somebody says, how do you expect to understand something godly if your body is spiritually
unfit,
I mean, or impure. How do you expect something to understand something spiritual if your whole existence is spiritually not there?
But you can.
How?
That's how people in tshuva, they make tshuva. They can understand.
Tshuva is a whole different story.
But their body is unfit and they still can grasp.
They can't grasp. It's only because at that time the neshama awakens itself in a deeper level. But because of that, it's still harder for them to do tshuva.
What do you mean? Because the body's unfit? That's what you mean?
Yeah.
It's harder because they have to work on...
Because you have a coarser system.
Yeah, you have to.
Right.
The body is physical. How is the body becoming spiritually unfit? You said the body becomes spiritually unfit, but the body is physical.
And any law of impurity?
Well, that's purity and impurity.
But you're saying the body becomes impure. Listen, a person becomes either bodily tumor, or a person touches a dead body. There's no dirt, there's no filth. Your body is impure. The physical body is impure. Spiritual, the same thing with food. Tray for food creates an impurity, spiritual impurity within the body. And only for a Jew, by the way. Like we said, there's absolutely nothing wrong with a guy eating chazer. There's nothing wrong. For a Jew, it's spiritual suicide. But we're going to see more into... And because Jews are so connected to Hashem, Hashem doesn't want them to do anything which will impair their relationship with Hashem. And these things the Torah says are. Why? Only Hashem knows. It's a chayk. It's not a logical thing. And he says like this. We're just going to begin this because this is for next week really. Kol mafreses parsa. What animals are you allowed to eat? Anything that has a split hoof. Separated into double hoofs, and chooses cud, Eisa techelu, that is what you're allowed to learn. It's allowed to eat, I mean. So basically, in order to eat a kosher animal, it needs to have split hoofs. It needs to have, chew is cut. Now, here there's a picture of the animal. I don't know if, I mean, this, I'm surprised in these chumashim, they don't have a picture of the animal. But anyway, there's four stomachs in the animal, in a cow, in a kosher animal. So the cow chews it in one stomach, then it goes back up to the mouth. They chew it again, it goes into another stomach. And it keeps going on a regular basis. Huh? No, we'll see next, I mean, it's too late for now. Next week, there's a whole elaboration on what does it mean spiritually, split hoofs, and chewing its cud. I think even in this chumash, if I'm not mistaken, they have a picture. Yeah. In these chumashim, there's a picture of what real split hoofs are, that they're completely split. Not some animals have a little split. It has to be completely split, the hoofs of the animal, for it to be a kosher animal. So if it has split hoofs and chooses cud, then it's a kosher animal. And again, we'll discuss the mitzvah shem much greater length next week of exactly what that means. Okay. Achazalei seichlu. These are the only animals that you cannot eat. Mimalea gedo mafrisia parsa. From those that chew its cud and have split hoofs, these are the ones that you're not allowed to eat. And the pasuk is going to continue because they only have one of the two signs. And by the way, it's very interesting. The Torah is going to mention a few animals that have one of the two signs. And that's it. This is one of the, not that we need it, but this is one of the proofs they bring Torah's Min HaShemayim. Because when this statement was said, it said a definite statement, a chazer, a gomel, you know, have only one of the two. Besides the animals mentioned in the Chumash, there are no other animals in the world that they ever found to have one of the two signs, besides the one that the Torah mentions. And they said if this was man-made, how could it be possible that they did know all the animals in the world? Right? To know what, that which one has only one of the two. So they bring this in the Goyish, in the Jewish world to prove to Goyim that Torah is Min HaShemayim, that you would, this is one of the proofs that they bring because they never found any other animal that would be like that.
They have one of the two.
That have only one of the two. Only the ones that Torah mentions. And that's it. And then there's another din also. Remember there was a while ago they found a pig that chewed its cud? Remember a few years ago, there was a whole tumma, they found this kosher chazer in Israel. There was a whole maisa. But all there was a bum maisa, like all the other stories they come up with. Because there's a din that what happens if a cow has kosher signs, right? Gives birth to a cow that doesn't have split hoofs.
Awesome.
Why, you can't have a freak nature?
Mutation.
You can have.
Mutation, yeah.
Or, what happens if a chaza gives birth to an animal that chooses cut and has split hoofs? So the din is, it really doesn't matter. There's a rule in halacha like this. If it comes from a kosher animal, it's kosher. If it comes from a treif animal, it's treif. Mm-hmm. Like we know, why is pig's milk treif? Because anything that comes from a pig is treif. Ostrich eggs are treif because an ostrich is treif. So eggs are treif of an ostrich. Because anything that comes from a kosher animal is kosher. Anything that comes from a treif animal is treif. So even, let's say, if a cow technically would give birth to an animal that doesn't chew its cud, it doesn't have split hooves, you know, it'll still be kosher. And if a chazer gave birth to an animal that has both, it still wouldn't be kosher.
It's like the mom was Jewish no matter what.
The mother's Jewish. Okay.